I'm an addict named Dwight. I'm a recovering addict named Dwight. Trying to reprogram my mind to staying recovering addict. It's hard to do because I develop habits of doing things a certain way. It's hard to change that. I know y'all wondering, why am I here doing this workshop? Because after all, here I am, got jet black hair, a jet black mustache, a nice firm stomach, very good, strong, firm body. He said, why is this young, handsome, devastating man doing here, doing aging and recovery? That's my denial working. I heard denial was, don't even notice that I'm lying. I remember I shaved my head in 1995. It was August of 95 I shaved my head. And I would pass by shadows. And I would see his little pinhead. And I was accustomed to seeing a globe from having the afro. But I had a big hole in the donut back here, you know. But I kept having this afro. And I couldn't believe that that was me now. And the same way, sometimes I look in the mirror and I say, who's this guy here? Who's this guy here? And it's me. You know, Gwen, thank you. I was going down memory lane, so we talked. I was thinking about, this is way back, probably around 87, 88, on this journey of recovery that we know so well, how we did caravans and went to conventions in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, and there'd be cars and cars of us, you know? And we was all young and vibrant and on fire for recovery, and we felt we had our whole life ahead of us.
Wow.
And it was true.
Yeah.
We had a whole life ahead of us. But the bottom line is now, more time behind than we got ahead. You know, really. And that's the reality of recovery. And I'm going to talk about my strength, my experience, and my hope, and I'm going to get as butt naked as I can and as God allows me to do. And like Gwen, I made notes also. But I think I really suffer from, not suffer yet, that's not the right word. I feel like I have some of the beginning stages, not Alzheimer's, I don't think, but forgiveness.
Yeah.
Forgiveness.
Yeah.
Because I have made notes. I have made notes over the weeks. But I would lose notes. Then I'd make notes somewhere else. And I would lose notes. And I would make notes on my computer. And I would lose notes. And I can't find nothing. And I had a little something here, I'll make little notes. And I can't find things. If I show you my wallet, it has little notes of everything. Because I know if I don't write things down, I will forget. And some of this I know is normal aging stuff. But the other part of this for me is that those who know me, my mother died with Alzheimer's. And for the last 5-6 years of her life, me and my last wife took care of her. Now I'm talking about the wiping the butt, the feeding her. And for the last 2 or 3 years, she didn't know who I was. But the bottom line was that I always remember who she was. And that was the important thing. So when I forget things, my mind, being an addict, would magnify and say, oh no, God, this could happen to me. And I have told people that's close to me, I know recovery addicts don't believe in this, I wish Kevorkian was around, but I have told people close to me, just go into the nursing room and give me a hot shot. I don't care who do it, just let me go away mellow. And I know addicts would never do that for another recovering addict. They'd rather see you suffer to the end. But I will give a last will and testament, Moni, saying I'd rather go out with that last zoop, you know, really, because I don't believe in suffering. You know, and I have been clean long enough to see a lot of stuff. We used to say that every addict give us a message. Some what we must do to be in recovery and some what we must not do. I believe, listen to me, you will hear some of the both of that stuff, okay? And I'm talking about aging and recovery, how you will hear certain things. And I'm in pretty good health, really. Besides high blood pressure, I'm in pretty good health. And I remember when I was told by my doctor years ago, I had two doctors. And one doctor said, take medication. Other doctor said, Dwight, your blood pressure is better without medication than mine is on medication. Don't take it. And I'm listening to both of them until one doctor said, Dwight, why don't you do it? I said, well, I'm afraid my shit won't work like I want it to work. He said, well, Identify, man. Identify. He said, if you dead, it ain't gonna work anyway. And he said, he said, you take it. You take it. We can adjust the medication where it work a little bit better, a little bit less. And I thought about it. As I've gotten older, it worked less anyway. So I said, okay, true. What you talking about? When I was a young buck, I remember at this convention, me and some of my friends used to brag, you know, I didn't see you an hour ago. Y'all was getting a little bit. Make this workshop, go up, get some more. Make this workshop, go get some more. You know, it's kind of shit, you know? And I was like, shit, what did I tell you had some? Well, a couple weeks ago. Good, you know? And it's not as important as it was years ago, you know? What's important is really a thing we call life. Really, life. And that's the really important thing. And I have gained so many experiences. I remember I'm a survivor also of hepatitis. And I remember in 99, I had about 15 years clean at that point in time. About 14, 15 years clean. And I've been going to the doctor every year since I was like 40 years old. I learned that from the women. Women go religiously to the doctor. I learned that from women. So I started doing what the women do. And I was going every year. One time the doctor said my liver enzymes wasn't right with my physical. I said, what's wrong? And they told me hepatitis C. Talking about crying. I'm home on the computer looking at this stuff. They're saying you're going to die in 30 years, that kind of stuff. And I'm at home. 1 o'clock at night, 2 o'clock, I'm crying like a baby. I'm crying. They say, hey, Dwight, you won't get out of this alive anyway. You're going to die at some point in time anyway. And I went through the treatment 3 times. Went through it till I got in remission, you know. But still, this whole thing called life really got to me, worrying about this thing called life. The last time, this is the second time for me doing aging and recovery. A lot of people don't remember it. I remember it. I did aging and recovery in 2010. Same convention. And I'm going to give you an update on how it was then and how it is now. Now, many of us, I got clean when I was 31 years old. I am 59 years old now. Okay? When I got clean, my youngest child was like 4 years old. The next one was like 9. Another son who was in the Philippines at that point in time. He was however old he was, you know. Now he's 39. My other son's 36, and my daughter's 32. Wow. Where I was a mediocre father, now I'm a grandfather with 6 kids, 6 grandchildren, okay, and a pretty great grandfather. But I say that to give you the backdrop on how things change, okay? When I was clean, and my parents had the opportunity, my father saw me clean for a good 24, 25 years before he went on, and I became his best friend. He respected me and loved me. My mother, likewise. So they saw the change in me. They saw the recovery in me. I remember when I had a couple of years clean. I've been married 3 times, so please understand this. A lot of people never been married before, but I've been married 3 times, and I'm good. I know how to do it with experience, how to get in. I know how to get out. I know how to get out with dignity. Okay? I mean, that's my story. And with the... with the second wife, when I got married, when I got clean, I was in my second marriage. And I can recall being married like 4 or 5 years, talking to my father, said, Dad, I don't feel this passion with my wife. What should I do? He said, Dwight, I'm 65 years old. What can I tell you about passion, you know? I didn't understand that then. Now that I'm about to turn 60, I understand that. But I went on, let that wife go, and everything was okay, and we became good friends and everything else. And I spent like about 12 years as a single man in these fellowships, okay? And what I would do, because I have no tolerance for bullshit. Excuse me. I have no tolerance for your bullshit. I have tolerance for my bullshit. And one thing I knew how to do, if I'm with somebody and it's not going good, you know, baby, it's time for you to move or time for me to move. And I had a crew of guys. If I'm in my new one with you, I can call guys three or four guys, hey, be there at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I gotta move. And just like that, my sponsors will be there, and we'll move out, you know? And if they didn't go good, because I've always had resources, I'll say, well, look, this is mine, and how much it costs you to move back and get you an apartment, I'll write you a check for this apartment. And that's the way I just did things. I didn't believe in leaving people homeless. I had a process. I heard someone said, if I can't help you, I won't hurt you. And I don't know how well that worked or not, but that's what, that was my principle, you know? That's my principle, be it right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm saying this how I got married again in like 98. And for a lot of the wrong reasons, a rebound relationship. So I got married like a year later. We had like three or four arguments in the process of getting married. And I hope people learn some things that I learned as time went on. Because I was still a young man. But I got married again. She had a couple children. I had a couple children also. And some of the principles I learned, and talk about aging and recovery, is I'm not going to do more for your kids than I do for my own. A lot of time, men, that's what we do, we'll do more for her. This is my woman. I'll treat her kids, but I'll treat my own. Yeah. And a lot of times, men ignore their own kids and treat their current woman's kids better. Well, my principle was, if I do it for my kids, I'm not doing it for your kids. Everybody on the same platform, be it like it or lump it. That's just the way it is, you know? And that's what I ended up doing. But I ended up raising another child from age 4 till basically 18. Treated her like she's my own, took care of her. She didn't want for anything. And I was a damn good father, a damn good provider, and pretty probably a mediocre husband, you know? Because the love wasn't the way it should have been. I gotta give her a props though. And that's one thing I miss about the history. You know, growing old gracefully with her, I helped her raise her children. She helped me with my mother, this kind of stuff. And we really had a great thing as far as helping me with my mother. But one thing I realized in that last year or two of the marriage was that the bonding element was my mother. Okay. The same way people stay together for kids, mm-hmm. I was together with her for my mother. And when my mother passed, I'm like, and I knew this coming, I said, why am I still here? I talked to my sponsor about 6 months. I'm talking about getting aging and recovery. My sponsor is about 10 years older than I am. He's been married about 3 times. My sponsor before was about 13 years older than me. He'd been married twice. The sponsor I had before him from the other fellowship is 84 years old now, and his third or fourth marriage, got 40 years sober. He's been married like 4 times, you know, so I have people I talk to for experience. You know, please, you know, help me. So I don't do things without asking people. And I was miserable in my marriage, and I was thinking about getting out, and she does some things that really upset me. And I called my sponsor, and I said, you know, this stuff is dead. He said, well, Dwight, if it's dead, bury it. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. So we was on the verge, and this is before the last aging and recovery. He said, dead, bury it. He said, well, make sure you're doing what you need to do, and don't go back if you're not, you know, don't be wishy-washy. Mm-hmm. Don't be double-minded. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do it, do it. None of this going back and forth. One thing I found out about me, I could not survive tears. Many men cannot survive tears. I cannot survive tears. If my lady was crying about something, okay, baby. So I was ready to break up, and she started the crying. And when she started crying, okay, baby, we'll try it one more time. We'll try it one more time. And I held on beyond expiration date. Okay? So I went through another 6 months of really being miserable. My father passed. And it's funny, when my father passed, I had the opportunity of changing his diaper also. And I said, Dad, you've been a great father. Go on. Go in peace. And he passed the next day, you know. And I remember when my mother passed, and I'm talking about still the aging and recovery. My mother passed, I got there about a half hour later, and my wife at that point was there, my niece was there, and I saw my mother's face as she passed go from grimacing, being in pain, to being in peace. It just changed. I said, wow, thank you, God, you know. And within a week or two of my mother passing, my wife asked me something like, she said, Dwight, what are we gonna do about this marriage? Now, you know the old thing we say around this program, a happy wife, a happy life, or happy life, a happy wife. OK, Okay, I said, I don't know. And she said, you told me that same shit last year. What are we gonna do? And that gave me the nerve to say, it's time for a divorce. And we quickly went through the house and said, I want this, you want this, I want this, you want this, I want this here, and whatever, you know. And really, true story. I've done that before. I had experience. And within like 2 weeks of that date, she was able to move out. She left me the house. I didn't want the house, but she left me the house. So I had the house. And she said she wanted so much spousal support. I said, well, that's what you were ripping off. I can have no money, but I can't argue worth shit. Really, I'm into peace. I cannot argue. The older I get, the more I get where I don't like to argue. I want peace. The way to man's heart is not through my stomach or my penis. The way to my heart is direct to my heart. Give me peace and you'll have me forever. Okay? And we used to argue about money and whose money. I always made money. So I let her handle the bills. I didn't know until six months before we separated on what was happening with the money. And when I looked at the bills the last 6 months, I took control of my money, not hers, mine. What I saw was every month between $1,000 and $1,500 was missing that I couldn't account for, nor would she account for. So when we separated, she said she wanted $1,200 a month to make it. I said, sure. What you been taking anyway? Yeah. And I went on and went for the divorce. And I'm talking about the aging. I went on, went through the divorce. And people were saying things at the last aging and recovery workshop. People were saying, I'm talking about the misinformation, but it's true, but it's misinformation for some people. That's what I'm talking about this. People said, Dwight, don't leave her. Because you're getting older. And you never know you're going to get sick. And she might wipe your ass. Don't have to wipe your ass.
Yep.
And it's true. But how can I live my life being unhappy in the event that maybe she has to wipe my ass? I mean, really, how self-centered is that? That I'm going to hold on to you, I hate your guts, I can't stand being around you, but I'm going to prostitute my joy and hold on to you, and just hoping that if I get sick, maybe you will wipe my ass. Suppose I check out like this, all of a sudden, no God, please, I can't go yet, she haven't wiped my ass yet. I have to work this stuff through my mind. Mm-hmm. And I remember once, aging and recovery. I remember right after I got separated, paying spouse support. You know, when I divorced my second wife, I never was a day late with child support. My daughter was 6 years old, she got 18. I never was a day late with child support, never. No brag, just fact. With spouse support, I never was a day late with spouse support. One time I was at Eastland Mall, and I was re-engineering my wardrobe and re-engineering my house. And every room got repainted and new furniture and everything else. They just decked it all out again. And I'm at Eastland Mall just doing my impulsive shopping. And I'm standing in the line, I was getting dizzy. I said, why am I getting dizzy? And my mind said, well, suppose you fall out here. Who's going to take care of you? What's going to happen to you? They're going to rip you off. My mind's going. I said, shut up, Dwight. And when I said, shut up, the focus came again, and I was okay, you know. I went on and went through the divorce with dignity. God's so good. Within like a month of her moving out, I met another lady, just blew my mind. Now, somebody said something, I heard something years ago. Guys, they said, the older we get, the younger they get. I don't believe that, but if I look at my first wife, was 1 year older than I. The second wife was 5 years younger than I. My third wife was 8 years younger than I. My current fiance is 14 years younger. I can't go no lower. I hope. I pray to God that this is the youngest one. The last one. Because I don't want to be, you know, dating nobody my daughter's age or the grand. I mean, to me, that's perverted. That's perverted. You know, that's for me. I ain't judging nobody. What about for me? I couldn't take my daughter and say, you know, this is my woman, my fiance, whatever else, and they're the same, and they're peers.
Yeah.
And I still listen to Lou Rawls, you know, and things like the old music, which is something else. Lou Rawls had a record when I was a kid, Memory Lane, when I was 17. And I wasn't even 17 then. When I was 21, I wasn't 21 then. And when I was 35, It was a very good year. I wasn't even 35 then. And I went beyond all that. I'm talking about aging and how time passes so quick. It's something. The daughter, the stepdaughter, who I never called stepdaughter, about a year ago, she was at my son's house. And she had some tattoo, had a tattoo on her leg. And I'm being dad. I said, you got this tattoo on your leg. From where you get this tattoo? And she said something about, you know, some little smart comment. I said, how many more tattoos you get? You gonna get? And she said, get none. I said, yeah, you'll get some more. And she said, no, I won't. I said, yeah, you will. She said, you don't know me. I said, I raised you since you was 4 years old. I know you. That girl got so loud and indignant. Mm-hmm. You know, get the fuck out of my face. I said,
Wow.
I didn't raise my hand. She said, get the fuck out of my face. I said, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Several times. I'm at my son's house and he running. The grandkids running. They said, oh, dad about to get up, you know? But as a older man, spiritually fit man, I never used profanity. I never raised my voice. And I said, you know, I got a son who's 39. I got a daughter, another son who's 35 and a daughter 32. And they have never used profanity in their life at me. Always been respectful. I said, you ever see me again? Act like you don't know me. Don't you ever call me dad again. And don't you ever call me again. And I meant that. And I walked away with dignity. Now I'm talking about how you gotta separate things. Yeah. Now another thing I learned in aging recovery, because I divorced a woman, does not mean I divorced the whole family. Right. She has her mother I love dearly, like my mother, and we stay in regular contact. There was a brother-in-law who I love dearly, we stay in regular contact. There was a sister-in-law that I love dearly, we stay in regular contact. It's just a woman. I'm talking about things I learned as far as aging and recovery, how you gotta navigate this stuff. And a lot of this stuff is not spelled out in our life, in our inventories, and in our literature. But it says in this new book, Living Clean, as the rhythm of our life change, so does the music. As the rhythm of your life change, so does the music. And that has been so true for me. You know, I believe in being equally yoked. Equally yoked. In the 2 years and 4 months that I've been this last lady, she moved in my place about 6 months ago. I wouldn't do it quicker because I didn't want to do it too quick, because what I practice what I preach, and I would tell everybody else, wait a couple years. So I couldn't tell everybody else wait a couple years and do it quicker myself.
Right.
So I called my sponsor. I'm about to get involved with this girl, what do you think? He said, Dwight, you're doing what grown folks do. He said, you ain't new, she ain't new, you're doing what grown folks do. So I kept doing what grown folks do. And being equally yoked, I'm talking about being equal, somebody of like mind, you know. We go on trips, and same thing I say, oh, like here, she said, I'm getting a hotel. I said, okay, well, I'll pay the meals. A couple months ago, last month, we went to Tampa. I said, I'll get the flight. She said, I'll take care of the hotel. You know, that's how it is always wherever we go. It's the sharing thing, you know, being equally yoked. Where it all will come out of here or there. I said, what you think about getting married? She said, okay. I said, okay, scary. Because a lot of times, when my father got married the third time, to the day he died, he would say things like, Dwight, you know, I know my past sometime, but I haven't did a will. He said, I got this problem. I have you as my son, and I have my wife has her daughter, and we got these grandkids. I don't know how to do this. I always say, Dad, don't worry about it. It's hard to separate these kind of stuff.
It is.
I asked my fiance before I proposed, I said, what do you think about doing a prenup? Because I ain't no poor man. Haven't been, ain't gonna be. Okay? I said, what do you think about a prenup? She said, sure. Will you sign mine also? And I said, of course I will. Because I really believe the God that took care of me in 1984 and since will take care of me in 2013 and on. I don't need yours. He takes care of me. A couple of things I want to talk about, the business of aging and recovery. And the fear we get about getting old and dying.
Yes.
quit using Just for Men and My Mustache about 3 years ago.
Okay, all right.
Then I saw how a lot of older guys shave. You don't see no mustache. And most black men, you look around, most black men have mustaches. But a lot of older black men you see don't have no mustache. So they shave it off so you don't see. If I didn't shave my head, you would see how old I really look with all the gray and stuff. You know, if I don't shave in a day or so, it's all gray. It's kind of stuff. But so I'm trying. A week ago, I was in Tampa, and I shaved it off. That's how I look. Oh, my God, let this shit grow back. I decided I'd rather have gray than have nothing, you know? About October, November last year, one of our brothers in the fellowship passed. Some of y'all may know Burl, Big Burl. Yeah. Big Burl would hug me like I was a little kid. He'll hug me, take my head, go. Oh. And I would say, Burl, if you was a small guy, I'd knock you out. I always headed to Burl. And he looked at me and kind of smiled. When he passed, it was such a shock to me. And I talked to God, because God is my friend. If he's not your friend, please get with the program and make him your friend like you do a sponsor. You know, this stuff about having a sponsor you don't love, that's bullshit. I have loved every sponsor I've had. I cultivate the relationship with him. And I cultivate and work relationship with God, where that's my friend, okay? And when Burl passed, I'm talking to God. I said, God, I do not want to die a young man like this. And God said, basically, Dwight, you're 58 years old then, 59 years old. You're not a young man. I said, okay, God. You have to talk to God more. And I know other people say this. I'm not that different. I said, God, I don't want to die a violent death. Yeah. As if God don't know what violence is. I said, God, I'm talking about gunshot wounds. I'm talking about knife wounds. I'm talking about a car accident. I'm talking about I don't want to die drowning. I don't want to die in a fire. I went this whole litany of things like God's ignorant, you know? And he said, okay. Then I said, God, I don't want to die an old man also with somebody else wiping my butt. And then the Spirit said, shut up. Shut up. If I take care of the birds, if I take care of the sparrows, I will take care of you. A month or so before, my fiance and I went on a vacation, and we was in Mackinac. And taking the trolley over to Mackinac Island, I saw this bird flying. And the bird, as the bird flew, to me it was symbolic of faith. How you launch from one place, and you want to go somewhere else, and you just keep exercising until you get there. Okay. And I watched the bird fly, and the bird flew, and he would glide at times. And he was coasting, like we do in our recovery sometimes. And sometimes I thought, watch the bird start going down, and he started flapping and flapping hard, and flapping hard and flapping hard, and he would go a little faster and get higher and get altitude. And I said, okay, God, thank you. I need that. And that's how my recovery has been so often. There's times I could coast, and there's times I gotta really work hard. With 28 years clean, there's never been 1 week that I didn't make at least one meeting. That's only when I was in grad school, and that was in 89. My normal due was always three meetings a week. And I've always done inventories and done step studies. But as we know, we talk about what's good for one part of recovery is not necessarily good for another part of our recovery. Right. Mm-hmm. I've been in step study groups. I'm talking about maturing and following God's lead. I've been in step study groups for 25 years. And in December, my last step study, I said, I'm removing myself from it, and I'm going on to see what God wants me to do, what more God wants me to do. And I'm talking about that because as we get older, the same way old folks, the older people get, the more they talk about God. I don't know why, but I think because they realize what's really important is God. And I know the older I get, the more I talk about God. One day I was home and this song hit my spirit, and there's an old gospel hymn said, I need thee every hour, I need thee. You know, every hour. I ain't talking about just once a day, but every hour. That's okay. I downloaded this song and it became so important. This Just for Day program is that I need thee every hour. not once a day. I need thee every hour. I was my daily meditation. I be shaving my head in the morning, and I be singing a little hymn, hallelujah hymn. This is my story, hallelujah hymn, to get meditated and get sound and get one with the Father. And it hit me also that early in the morning is when I am one with the Father. Because at that point in time, no defects have been exercised, no shortcomings. I have not called anybody any names. No one has bothered me, and I'm really one with the Father. I'm saying, thank you, God. And it's, I became a thing. How do I cultivate this to keep this going all day? Just like Chinese food, don't stick to your ribs. What must I do to make this spirituality that I have in the morning stick with me all day? Because I want to get there. I really want to get there. And I believe if I keep asking him, he's going to show me this. You know? I'm going to talk about the spirituality that I learned. Now, recently, and God keeps giving me more and more and more. And I just thank God for it. Same thing recently when our brother Tyrone passed. I went through the same thoughts again with God, about God, not me. When is it my time? When is it my time? And it came back to again, Dwight, just for the day you're living. I have talked to God so much that when I was in Florida last week, I said, God, why are you talking to me all the time now? Why? Am I about to die? Am I about to die? And he said, no, my son, you're living. You're living. And I'm talking about how sweet that is. Then I had this dream. Let me back up. When Tyrone passed, I talked to my best friend, Larry B. in Philadelphia. And Larry and I talked on the phone. And then Larry B., he's my sponsee, my best friend, but in many ways, he's a spiritual giant. Larry B., in his calmness, sent me an email back when I was telling him about Tyrone passing. He said, yeah, I heard about Tyrone passing. He sent me an email, and his email said, Dwight, I realize we all have our time and we're all gonna go. He said, I pray that we both have a long and healthy life. But when it's our time, he said, I hope I go first. I hope I go first. Now if you can picture, I can see that with my mother and father, let me go first. But we meet people in the rooms, and to love somebody so unconditionally, and you say, God, let me go first. And I think about that. How would I cope with him leaving, Aaron leaving, Bomani? People have been together so long, from young men, so we went through parents passing, and we support each other. Like you have crutches, support each other, they support each other like that, you know? I had a dream a few weeks ago. And in my dream, I was walking and I felt the wind blowing around me. As I felt the wind blowing, old folks also keep hankies.
Yeah, we do.
Wise old folks keep hankies. Also, a lot of times they keep peppermint candies in their purses and pockets too. That's humor, it's true. On my desk, I got all kind of peppermints on my desk at work. At home, peppermint candy, butterscotch. Yeah, I don't know why we do that. Yeah. In this dream, I was walking, and I felt the wind blowing. As the wind blew, I started in the wind guide me. And it was guiding me, it was kind of pushing me, and I'm walking along with the pace of the wind. And before you know it, I was like letting the wind down. I found myself, the wind pushing me. And I couldn't see the air, but I felt it. I was pushing me. And before you know it, I was floating on air the same way you float on water. And it was so miraculous for me. As I floated on this air, I said, wow, this is cool. And I started gliding, and it took me up higher. As it took me up higher, I started having fun. I said, wow, this is fantastic. This is great. And it was at the right speed for me. I didn't feel any fear. I felt totally supported. And I said, wow. And then all of a sudden, I stood up in the air, and I started treading air. And I said, God, wow, thank you. What's this? This is great. And then I said, but I'm human. I can't do this. I'm a human being. And the minute I said that, I started going down, and I started dog paddling, falling. And I hit the ground. And I woke up saying, God, I want to do this again. And I've been trying to do that again. And I said, what does this mean? And I started Googling about flying. And I found out it meant confidence and victory and overcoming things and everything else, trying to, you know, find out what it meant. I asked people at work what it meant. And I'm a workaholic. And many times, I do things according to the spirit. And I had a letter I had to get done for the Department of Corrections. And I got up at 3 o'clock one morning, it was a Thursday morning, to finish this letter. And I finished the letter about 5 o'clock in the morning. And before I cut my computer off, I checked my email, my personal email. And Larry's wife had sent me a letter, an email. And her email had said, when God tells you you're enough, what does it mean? When God tells you, Jeff, you're enough, what does it mean? So I was explaining to her what I see in that. That's not about the degrees or how many letters you got behind your name or how many, what car you drive or where you live. But when God say, you're enough as you are, you're enough, what does it mean? So I was telling her from my perspective how good it feels to be enough. How good it feels to be just okay, enough. The revelations of my dream came to me, and it became a thing of, I'm crying like a baby at night. It became a thing of following God's spirit. As he leads me, the airway, the air is pushing me, follow the spirit. Do what he tells me to do all the time. Lean into it, okay? Do that. When it was supporting me, when I was floating on air, it was God telling me basically that he will support me, excuse me, that he will support us, that we can rely on him, that we can depend on him, that he will not let us fall. Believe that. When I was treading air and having fun, it was God telling me that doing the right thing for the right reason is fun. It's enjoyable to be in his will, to be in sync with him. It's fun to do that, enjoy doing that, love doing that. The thing was also, you gotta stir things up sometimes. You gotta stir things up. Okay, you can't let it be still, you gotta stir things up. The thing also, when I took my eyes off of him and put it on me, I started falling. It was to keep my eyes on him all the time. The relief of letting go and letting God help us life, help us develop a life worth living. That must keep my mind focused on him all the time, and I can fly. Since then, I met a couple people already who told me, one guy said, I fly all the time. His life shows it also, that he flies all the time. Now, I'm going to shut down, but closing out my stealth study group and going on, God has led me and got me involved in a couple other things. One, it's like always, God, what do you want me to do next? He got me involved with the fellowship and some regional business that became some group business and some area business and some personal business. Said, okay, God, thank you. That led me to go to Tampa, okay? How God just leads me. Another thing, East Africa. I never thought about going to Africa. I'm too scared to go to Africa, okay? Well, the minute I got this stuff to the group, I heard about this East Africa convention, and something said, Dwight, why don't you go? And I know I got the money, and I said, okay, I'm going. One guy had been there like 4 or 5 times, so I got a bodyguard, an escort, a tour guide. So I said, okay, Andre, I'll go with you. And Bamaya said, he'll go also. So it's something else. And we've had 2 fundraisers already. The 2 fundraisers and the money we sent, Detroit has sent over $1,100 over to the convention in East Africa, which is meaning carrying the message over there also. The same way we have injured people here, that would ever hear the message, as we help them, there's people there that need to hear the message. Because this is a worldwide fellowship, you know. So God is just leading me and guiding me into new things. I'm just saying, God, what's next? Show me what's next. And I'm open to receiving what's next. Before I show them a couple of things also I want to tell you. An aging fellowship. When I look around, many of us in most areas, most people I see are close to my age. Give it 5 years, 10 years, whatever else. You know, it's true. When I came here, it was all younger, a young fellowship. We need to work harder if we're going to survive. We need to work harder at getting more younger members. I do better sponsoring people my age than I do with youngsters. I realize that. I don't have that much in common with people who like to listen to. I don't have that much in common. I understand addiction, but I sponsor the seniors and the seniors to be better than I sponsor youngsters. I mean, really. It's just the way it is. But we need to work harder on getting some young blood into these doors. The same way we're gonna need meetings in nursing homes as time goes on. Uh-huh. In the book Living Clean, in the section about disability, it says most of us at some point in time will have disability, either short term or long term. Believe that. And we're gonna have meetings in nursing homes. But we need to find ways to get some new members. When I got clean, we called the other fellowship where all the old people were. Yep. Well, now look at us. I mean, really. And not only this workshop, but look around. I went to Chicago in January. The dance, Virginia was talking. She was a midnight speaker in Chicago in January. I left her workshop at 12:40. I was so sleepy and tired, and she was still talking. I left there at 12:40, passed the dance. Nothing was happening. I asked the DJ, I said, what's happening? He said, they quit dancing. I said, what happened? What time? He said, about 11:30. The two fundraisers in Detroit we've had for East Africa, midnight, they have stopped. Last night, what did you see for the dance? I mean, really, we are an aging program. Let's act like it, really. The age, what we wear, should be age appropriate. I mean, really. A lot of women ain't wearing high heels no more, or as often. I mean, really, you know. My pants should not be sagging. This kind of stuff. I mean, really, that kind of stuff. I'm talking about really maturing and acting my age. You know, that's some important stuff. Another thing about the workshops. The workshops normally go to a certain time. People end the workshops early because they don't want to talk. They're tired. I'm tired, and I'm going to end this. And we still got 15 minutes. Really. Last night, I wanted Tyrone to keep talking. He was good. I wanted him to keep talking. He ended like a half hour early. When I was doing the program, speakers talk easily for an hour and a half. Running their mouth still. They had energy. I sat here. I went to the bathroom before I sat, came in this thing. We both come in, went to the bathroom first. She was sharing. My bladder said, Paulus over piss. I have to go. So it's time. I gotta go. Thank y'all. Thank you.